Yes, I think I would like to say, having said that there was a very bad feeling when we got into this place called Wraytham, and we called it Wraytham Bridge, and we had Bob Summers and his platoon from 555 to help us on that occasion. I think I would like to say that I know now that it is the site of deliberate reconciliation between old comrades in the British and German sides. In April of obviously probably the time of the bridge building and the battle, there is a meeting there, and I know people from the British side who have gone regularly, and people from I haven't met the people from the German side, but I've seen their pictures and that sort of thing. So I would like to record that.
Like a symbolic bridge.
Yes, it was. Yes, yeah. Yes. And I didn't give you the name of the previous bridge, which was at Osnabrück. And we called it Rushall Bridge because the town of Rushall had made a gift of the money for a Bailey Bridge, and they wanted it. They wanted to know where it was going to be built. And we jumped in and said, "Well, this we'd like to call this Rushall Bridge," so that's a little extra story about the bridge at Osnabrück, the high bridge at Osnabrück. Well, now we're over the Aller. We now went slightly northwards to be on the right flank of people attacking Bremen.
Can you estimate a time of year for this one?
Well, it must end of April, I suppose. Mm-hmm. I can't do more than that. I would have to look at the war diary to get it right. We were talking about exhaustion and falling out of the lorry, so to speak. It was at this point that I began to feel utterly exhausted and was a menace, really, at times to other traffic. You tended to forget that if you were camped by the roadside that it wasn't your road, it was a lot of other people's road as well. But anyway, we were on the flank, the right flank of the attack on Bremen, and we had to clear a part of a fallen reinforced concrete bridge so that we could use the Autobahn for our advance. We may think we were thinking big. Well, perhaps we were. But it was easier it had fewer obstructions than the ordinary roadways, and once you got onto it, it was splendid.
Yes.
So we did it. A reinforced concrete bridge causes the really devil to demolish, to remove when it has been demolished, because you've got all the reinforcing bars to cut and big chunks of masonry. But we did tackle that and got enough clear to be able to allow other people to advance on the Autobahn towards Hamburg. But we ourselves went south a bit, and we were on Lüneburg Heath, which you've heard about in many ways, and then we were told you're going to go across the Elbe. Now, we didn't build the bridge. Somebody else built the bridge. But we went over the Elbe, turned left, and went on for 10, 15 miles, and we were in Hamburg.
So what was Hamburg like?
Hamburg wasn't there. Hamburg was a few chimneys and miles of desolation as we came in. The centre of the city was still recognisable and standing, but the suburbs were utterly devastated. One just wondered, where on earth can these people be? Yeah. Sellers, maybe, but they weren't, of course, looking out for us.
What was the perceivable state of the Hamburg population? What did you see?
Well, after miles of this, we got into a place where it was a suburban place, and there were flats and all that. And we weren't very far to the east of the centre of the town. And they had begun to build defences and fortifications on the streets. So we just went into the, knocked on the door of the house, come out and not remove these defences. There and then.
What was their attitude to you?
Well, they did it quite obediently. One, except for one old chap. I'm a Serb. I said, yes, but please just get on with this. And he did. They were obstructed in the streets. It wasn't the most important road, but it was adjoining them, and we didn't want them to think that we could allow that sort of behaviour. I don't know when they were made. I've got no idea, but we made them come out and disrupt them. And then, not very far from there, somebody came up and spoke good English and said, "There's an English lady living here who'd like to talk to you." I just didn't feel able for that. I said yes, but no, not now. I didn't.
Why did you not?
Well, I mean, obviously she had married a German and was living there as a German. She would have liked, I'm sure she would wanted to be helpful, but I just didn't feel able like I could cope with that. We were too exhausted to take on higher points. I might have lost my temper or something. I just didn't want to do it. I just quietly said yes, but no.
So really, it's coming out now, the sort of physical and mental toll that all this months and months have taken on.
Yes. Well, it's 11 months.
11 months, yes. Yes. It's a long time. So, I mean, the whole of the Allied forces, unless they just come out, I mean, the ones that have been in Europe for a long time, it must be getting fairly tired.
We were very tired. We had no trouble in Hamburg. We learnt fairly soon that most of the Germans beyond us had surrendered. The one group hadn't and were fighting on. And I read only recently that a Russian contingent was proposing to take advantage of them secure the whole Baltic coast.
Did you see displaced persons in Hamburg?
Well, this Serb, I suppose, was... I don't know. I didn't see...
Not groups.
I didn't see... No, I didn't see groups of people. We were sent, and I personally wasn't involved, we were sent to clean up a concentration camp near Hamburg.
But you didn't go to that?
I personally... I think I was sent on a course in Ripon or something of the sort.
So you stayed in Hamburg for how long?
Well, it must have been a couple of months, I suppose.
And what was your role there?
Peacekeeping, I suppose. We would do any road repairs and things like that that were needed. The concentration camp was an aspect. And Then we went down to the Ruhr to take over the Ruhr from the Americans. And there was a tremendous lot of roads and bridges to be rebuilt there. And we did that work. mostly Bailey Bridges. Two things I remember in particular that we didn't think there'd be any harm in letting the Germans do some of the work. So I would go to the town major, whatever it is, and say, we want to do this. And he said, well, he says, I can't take any men off away from they're helping get the factories going. Can't possibly do anything unless it's unloading it. Oh, that's it, unloading a train. Yes, that's what I want. So he would send me 30 men to unload a train, and they were very pleased, actually, to get a job out in the sun and to get fed. I never heard again, but I met this chap in Glasgow many years afterwards, and we had a good laugh about it.
So was there any antagonism from the German population
to you? Oh, yes, of course. You weren't quite sure of the situation.
So you had to sort of judge each person exactly
what
their attitude
would be
to you.
Yes. In the Ruhr, our job was to get the communications going in, particularly the road communications. And if you dealt with the Germans, the people who had the responsibility, and you realised that I was an engineer too, you didn't get any problem. They only had to put it to you in your terms, and you would reach an agreement as to what to do and thing. The Strassemeister on the Autobahn became almost a friend. The most interesting job we had to do was that there was a floating Bailey Bridge. The Americans had built a floating Bailey Bridge across the Rhine, Triumph Bridge into Duisburg. And we had to maintain this, and we had to make the river navigable, which in Sapper terms means forming cut, that is, breaking the bridge so that there's a gap in the middle and river traffic can pass, and then put the pieces back in again. So it requires cable, you run. Well, I wasn't going to do it. We weren't going to do it. So we had electric power winches to anchors upstream. And the first thing to come through was a great floating crane so that they could remove obstructions at some canal junction or other where barges had been sunk into the river, or ships perhaps. Because there were quite big ships on the Rhine. We didn't see that, but that was, we wanted to get it downstream very urgently. So we saw and did it, and we did very well.
Because you must have always been under pressure of time. You know, people say, when's this going to be finished?
Well, you know, in battle, yes. In battle. Not, we didn't in the Ruhr, we didn't waste time.
No.
But we kept sensible hours, we didn't in the Ruhr. We enjoyed our work, and we were happy to do it, but no, we weren't going to work all night.
How long were you in the
room? 4 or 5 months. Mm-hmm. And then I was posted to the engineer training establishment at Knokke on the Belgian coast.
Right. Where were you when VE Day?
Hamburg.
You were in Hamburg then, right?
We were in Hamburg.
Yes. Right, so you went to Knokke.
Knokke. Became a bridging instructor there.
What was it like in those days, immediately after the war? There was a lot of rebuilding to be done, wasn't there?
Well, Knokke was fun. Knokke was fun. The Belgians were pleased to have you. They'd suffered a bit of bomb damage and thing, but it was a very happy situation. We were there through the winter, and in the spring, we moved to Hommel. In Brunswick, was it near famous Hanover City or something? In Brunswick, the Hamel, where the river waves are deep and wide, there's Hamelin town, and the rats were having a bit of a problem. Well, we moved to Hamel, and I was there for the rest of 1946.
And what were you doing there?
Well, I was instructing again, and my job was rafting and watermanship.
That what you'd sort of been best at, or was that what they wanted you to do?
Well, that was what they wanted me to do. Yes, I suppose I had a little bit of share of that. That's what they wanted me to do, essentially. I was also going to instruct in railway bridging, but they managed to get a railway engineer to do that, so I didn't have to do that. Then it got near to my demob date, and then they didn't want to let us go because so many people had gone, and others were being posted to the Far East or anywhere, you know, the people who'd been a long time out there wanted home. I said, well, I've got a career to get back to. So in the end, I didn't stay very long beyond my time and was home for Christmas 46.
Right. So what do you feel about of leaving? It's obviously there was some difficulty in the decision.
I never wanted to stay on in the army.
You were leaving a lot of.
A lot of friends, but I wasn't leaving wartime comrades. Mm. The engineer training establishment were just all the sapper officers.
Yes.
We hadn't been through hell together. Mm. They might have been through hell, but a different one from mine.
Yes.
So it was quite, that was just a job. It was your wartime comrades with whom you did go through hell, yeah, whom you want to keep in touch with.
Mm. So how was it actually arranged that you would leave the army, and how were you sort of demobbed, if that's the right word?
Well, I don't know the mechanics of it. I came back to Hull and forget what the route was, but we came to Hull and maybe in Emden to Hull, something like that. We went through, picked up our civvy suits, and put taken to York, put on the train to London. We had a good long leave. I did start work before the end of it.
What sort of work did you go back to?
Railway engineering. Railway civil engineering.
Yes. Which is what you wanted to do.
Yes. Yes.
So did you ever really celebrate the end of the war, VE Day or VJ Day? Or?
Yes, first of all, there was the great victory service in Hamburg.
Oh, right, tell me about that. When was that?
Well, I have to tell you that on my tag was C of S, Church of Scotland. And most of my other brother officers were Catholics. So for once I did a solidarity thing and didn't go into the service. I marched with them, but I didn't go into the service. I don't know really why. I suppose it was... I didn't want to leave my brother officers. I don't think there were any there who were Church of England. Mm. So I can only tell you that the parade was, everyone was in very good spirits, very happy. And of course we all went out to dinner. And the next table was my friends from 8th Corps HQ, whom I'd met at East Ham and Isson. And they were at the next table. So, by chance.
Yeah.
So, that was...
so that felt like an ending.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Which do you think were your darkest days in Europe?
Well, our darkest days were the Ardennes. Particularly where...
Because, I mean, the conditions, just the survival conditions must have been quite difficult.
Yes. You know, the enemy had had this surprise victorious advance into the Ardennes. And so long as there was snow, there was no air cover for us. Mm. And they had superior tanks to ours. So we only fought back because we had the air cover. Mm. We could only beat them because we had the air cover superior to theirs. Mm. Yes, that, the Ardennes were the blackest one, but you really spotted the... As the war came to an end, we were pretty well exhausted. Mm. Mm.
I mean, everyone must have been... Yes. You'd been living on dried rations and...
Well, they did quite a bit with the rations. The compo food only lasted less than a month.
Oh, really, yeah.
Before you got fresh bread and, you know, gradually got more natural rations. Mm. Mm. No, the rations...
It was the stress that really...
It was the stress, yes. Yeah, there were some people that thrived on it, of course.
Is it the stress of being killed, or is it the stress of working all hours? Is it fear?
I don't think you worry too much about being killed unless you're actually in a very tight situation. I suppose it's continued stress.
And the noise?
I'd have difficulty really giving you a truthful answer to that question. My natural stress level has for the rest of my life been a bit lower than other people's, than some other people's.
Yeah, so you don't easily get stressed up, yeah. What do you think, I mean... You put yourself down as Church of Scotland. I mean, did you?
I didn't, because I joined up in Aberdeen. They put me down as Church of.
So did this religious? I mean, the army had this sort of.
Well, I did. I did. I was renowned, if you like, for conducting services of my own platoon. Without the power of anybody else.
Oh, right. Where was that?
Anywhere where we had a quiet... Well, when we had a Sunday and peace and quiet.
Right. So you would conduct the...
Yes. I mean, very, very simple. Mm. Simple thing, yes.
And they'd all be...
They would all be happy to join in. I mean, one or two might not have done, but the majority were only too thankful.
What do you think was all the purposes of that? There must have been several benefits.
I think it was just a spontaneous reaching for help.
Did you have contact with Padres?
Yes, he had a very good padre. If he was going to come, I didn't attempt to do it, and I was only too pleased if he did come.
Yeah.
And I kept up with him until he died quite recently.
Well, what was his name?
Davis.
Yeah.
Davis.
Okay. RAMC, did you have any dealings with the medical service or any form, you know?
Well, of course I knew the captain... came from Keswick, names escape me at the moment, our doctor, I didn't really have very much to do with him, except that at the end of the war he said, well, I know you're a little bit stressed, and if there's any question of you going to Far East, you better come and see me quickly. So Howard, I think it was, no, maybe it's, Harrow, Dr. Harrow, that was him. Funnily enough, only the other day I had a letter from, or saw a letter from, the doctor of the Oxford and Bucks. Now, actually, I saw more of him bringing in casualties and that sort of thing than I did of our doctor, because I was working with the Oxford and Bucks so much. So I have replied, I haven't heard anything in return, but this doctor somewhere in the Midlands wrote to us in Swansea.
I mean, did anyone, you know, in your platoon or in your company that you had personal knowledge of, excuse me, suffer from shell shock or, you know, sort of just not be able to take any more of it?
Yes. Yes. Bomb happy was what we called it. And the doctor would recognise it.
Yeah. And what was your attitude to people that that happened to?
Well, you couldn't fight. They weren't any use to you around your feet.
So was there an opinion that they were shirkers, or were they...
No.
No, it was just...
No. Could have happened to any of us.